Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you, a special guest, a recent first-time winner in college golf, going to be joining us moments from now. A little late to the game this week, Brentley. Red eyes home from Pasatiempo for me. Life duties for you as well. So we're getting it going on a Friday morning, but we're here. We're like women's barely, conference championships barely. Are underway. Like, we talk about it, we pump it up, but this is the six-week run that, at least from our standpoint, makes it all worth it.
Yeah, Burke, I'm about at 85%, so bear with me. We had a sick dog, obviously getting back in the saddle after 2 weeks away, but yeah, we got the SEC women's, ACC women's going on now. The men's will start before you know it, and we'll be pretty busy, so it's time to get back up to 100% because we know that we're going to get worn down over these next 2 weeks as we, you know, cover the postseason run. So, but I wouldn't want to do it with anyone but you, Burko. So,
oh, you're too good to me, buttering me up. I can appreciate it. Likewise, my friend. We'll get into what's going on, what Sam Bennett did at the Masters. Take a look at the 500 rule a little bit later on. But let's welcome in Derek Kitchener, the fifth-year senior from Pepperdine, breaking through at Pasatiempo, getting that first collegiate win, helping the Waves double dip there as they did in 2021. Derek, always good to catch up. Appreciate you joining us. And now that you've had a couple of days to let it sink in, for you specifically as an individual, and you and I talked about it on the air, but maybe a little more in depth what it finally means to win and break through and sort of validate everything you've done through the years.
Yeah. No, thank you, Burko and Brentley, for having me. Really appreciate it. Yeah, it was an amazing week. It was obviously primarily super exciting to win as a team, and then to be able to win individually on top of that was pretty special. But yeah, still honestly pretty surreal, largely because of what we talked about, which was for the entire round, I really had no idea that I was in that leading position once I got into the back nine. And so to learn that information once I got basically to the scoring tent and then afterwards was honestly pretty unexpected. But yeah, obviously very, very exciting realization, something that I was obviously very happy about. It feels important. It feels like important validation. It feels like just an important kind of testament to the work I've tried to devote to kind of various aspects of my game to improve. And it's exciting for me, and from the standpoint of just knowing that I can get across the finish line in college, because I'd had a handful of tournaments this year where I've played solidly but haven't really contended for a title. And so to be able to just kind of get across the finish line and get the job done is pretty exciting.
I want to follow up on something you also shared with me the other day on the air of, you decided basically during the practice round that you weren't going to look at the leaderboards all week long. It went in your favor. Let's play devil's advocate that you signed your scorecard and then you realized, oh, wow, I did need to make one or two more. And I'm not looking at it from a negative standpoint, but now that you've done it without knowing where you stood, is that something you're going to do more? How much of a guessing game is it moving forward of, I'm on the 17th tee and I need to know that I've got to, you know, make two coming in?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I think that was the ideal situation for me to not look, because I was in that position where I was barely leading. But I was of the mindset that I needed to make something happen. So I tried to still kind of assert myself and try to still make as many birdies as I could. And so I was still playing fairly aggressively, at least that's how I perceived myself to be playing. It might not have looked at like it because the course was so challenging and I still had to be kind of conservative to a few pins. But I think if the situation were different and say I was down by a shot or two, say I was down by a shot or two, obviously that's probably tougher from the standpoint of, I would probably press the issue a little bit more. Like on 18, for example, I would maybe make sure I got the putts of the hole as opposed to leaving a 12 foot or a foot short. But I think at the end of the day, regardless of the circumstance, there's still, at least in my opinion, an ideal or an optimal way to play a hole. And within that, there's an optimal way to play a shot. And I think if I just kind of extricate myself from any sort of circumstance or from any sort of setting where the circumstances demanding me to play a certain way, I think just kind of simplifying everything down to just the shot I'm in is probably the best way to play. Cause it removes myself from the nerves that might arise from knowing the circumstance. And so I enjoyed doing that. I enjoyed not knowing, because the uncertainty of my position forced me to just focus and commit and concentrate as intensely as I could on the shot I had. And so I'll probably keep trying that for now and see how some more tournament experiences either kind of validate the approach or maybe make me question it. But yeah, I'm grateful that I tried it.
Now, Derek, you know, when the TV cameras show up, there's normally a reason for that, right?
That's true. Well, I would say walking up 18 green, the camera kept following me to the scoring tent. So that was probably my first inkling of an idea that maybe I was in a different position than I thought. But I just figured that I was probably in third or fourth. I just kind of assumed that Sam and Owen were a couple shots ahead. And so I figured that there's maybe a reason they were showing me, because I had an outside chance of contending. So yeah, it was just complete ignorance on my behalf. But I think it worked out pretty well for me, thankfully.
Now, Derek, for those who don't know kind of your story in college golf, fifth year senior from Minnesota, just kind of maybe briefly take us through the decision, one, to go to Pepperdine, and then two, just the patience you had to show, because when you arrived on campus, you weren't necessarily in the lineup all that much. You weren't part of that 2021 NCAA team, at least in the starting lineup for that. Just kind of talk about, one, the decision to go to Pepperdine, and two, how you've gotten to where you are now.
Yeah. I would say Pepperdine first got on my radar actually when I was in a different country. I was at a golf camp in Ireland, kind of an obscure camp, but also a really cool opportunity. It was called the Kerry Cup at a place called Waterville. And Coach Beard just happened to be there. I don't think I had heard of Pepperdine previously. And so that first put just the school and him on my radar. And I felt like we developed a good rapport just in talking a few times that week. But I think we probably both had an understanding that the strength of my golf resume was not quite sufficient at that point. And so we just kind of said we'd stay in touch if I was able to keep improving. And the following season, I started playing a little better. So ended up going on a visit, I think, the following summer. And once I saw the location, it occurred to me pretty quickly that was a pretty ideal place to go to school. And the program was improving just pretty rapidly, honestly, because it seemed like the recruits that Coach was getting were also improving. And Sahith and Rory and Josh and Clay were starting to just kind of make the program ascend to where it was getting into the top 25 when I first arrived. And so it just felt like that was probably the strongest golf program I was talking to. Academically, it was also among the best schools that I was in conversation with. And so it really seemed like a no-brainer. And another priority was just going to a warm weather climate, because I just felt like my development was hindered by the fact that I was only playing probably 6 or 6.5 months a year. And so guys I was competing against were playing just literally twice as much golf as I was. And so, yeah, it felt like a no-brainer for a lot of reasons. But yeah, like you said, Brentley, once I got there, it wasn't really a situation where I was playing every week and traveling every week. And so it was certainly frustrating from that standpoint, because I felt like I was not competing as much as I'd hoped. But I really just tried to adhere to the mindset that there's a purpose to that adversity, and that I could, instead of getting frustrated or dejected by that, I could really learn from the fact that I'm playing with people who are better than me. And as a result, I can learn a lot from them. And so I tried to adopt that, and I tried to draw as much as I could from people like Sahith and Rory and Josh and Clay. And then afterwards, Joe and Mao. And I mean, I could list a dozen players who are just absolutely fantastic players and people I learned a lot from. And so I wouldn't change anything about how the first few years went, even though I didn't really play a whole lot.
How would you describe the dynamic? You referenced 2 years ago, in and out of the lineup, you could argue 8, 9, 10 deep. While the last year or two, still a very good team, not nearly the firepower on the bench. How has that changed your approach to the game of maybe becoming a leader? And quite honestly, how has Pepperdine remained one of the nation's best when easily after graduation of the past two classes, there could have been a drop off?
Yeah. Yeah. I would probably point to towards the culture that was instilled in the team members by Coach Beard. Especially starting with the national championship winning team. I think what's changed though is that I would probably characterize that team as almost, I'm not going to say ruthlessly competitive, but something fairly close to that, just because it was a group of 9 or 10 guys who were unbelievably talented, but we all had the realization that only half of us were going to travel to a tournament. And we all recognized that, you know, we were probably capable of playing on most lineups. And so there was just a competitiveness that cultivated that was really, really motivating and something that also really kind of just drove improvement, drove a lot of hard work. And I feel like that's kind of lingered into the subsequent teams after that year. And there's just a lot of residual effect from the fact that there was just so much competition, so much competitiveness. And it forced people to get better. And I still think that's present, even though the team might not be both as large and as deep, but it's still, that competitiveness is still there. There's still just a really strong kind of motivating force for us to improve. Cause we also want to replicate what happened a couple years ago. And there's just a lot of motivation and a lot of desire to do that.
Now, I was talking to Coach Beard a couple of days ago, and he was talking about how close this team is off the golf course. I think you guys play poker almost every night. You hang out quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is that surprising that a roster where you have 3 freshmen and 4 of 7 fresh faces, is that surprising for you that you guys have gotten this close this fast? And secondly, could you just maybe give us a fun fact or something about each of your new teammates and kind of how they, you know, how they tick and your guys' relationship?
Yeah, yeah. putting me on the spot with the fun facts. I'll get back to that later.
it could be quick, you know.
Yeah,
Sam Choi, you know.
That's not a hard movie one. Star, yeah. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, no, it is surprising. Just on the point of team cohesiveness. Also just cause I would say I haven't really experienced a degree of team cohesion that we have this year. And so it's special. It's really neat that we have that. It feels like we developed that pretty early. And I don't really know what I can directly attribute that to. It seems like beneath all the competitiveness that we still harbor, there's just a deep and strong level of friendship that we all have. It just allows us to look past the fact that we're obviously still competing against each other. That doesn't change, but at the same time, we can be very friendly and we can have strong relationships beneath all that. I'm very grateful that we have that. It's been really just nice and fortunate to have a team that feels like we can spend a lot of time all together. And because it sounds like a lot of teams have that usually. And so I've just really enjoyed that kind of improved dynamic last year, not to say that previous years has been remarkably different, but there, I think it's maybe fairly obvious that there's just a slightly stronger degree of cohesiveness this year. So as regarding the fun facts, let's see. I mean, Sam is absolutely hilarious. He's such a character. I honestly, I'm kind of surprised he didn't take his shirt off when he pulled out 16. I thought Sam, but I kind of half expected that. He's a hilarious guy. It seems like he's always kind of the catalyst for team laughter and whatnot. I would say for Luke Gifford, some of us consider him to be, either 75 or 80 years old. It seems like he always has something that's ailing. He's also hilarious, though. He's super funny. Him and I kind of joke about how we're significantly older than our ages. It seems like there's also some very obscure injury that is kind of pestering us. Brady is considered the team ATM. Not sure, not in a gambling way, just someone who is very kind of generous when it comes to providing us with funding to various things. Probably shouldn't get into more details about that. Perfectly legal, not anything related to gambling. And then Birdo is also just a hilarious guy, super, super fun to be around. I'd say something about him, he tends to leave things behind very frequently. So it seems like we're, I don't know, going to tournaments or packing up, there's always something that Birdo leaves behind that we have to get. But yeah, overall, super fun group of guys. Super grateful that we've had this year together.
That's great stuff.
Your last 6 weeks in college golf, you and William have been there for 4 years. You bring in those new faces that have experience. What are you going to share with them heading into the postseason that, all due respect, they don't know what it's like because you've lived it? How do you share the information, the wealth, the knowledge to try to win another national title?
Yeah. No, I think that's a super important thing for William and I to share. But also, I'm still relying on William for that a lot because he has more experience than I do. Last year was my first kind of conference, regional, national sequence of experiences, and so I still feel like I'm still getting some experience under my feet. And but obviously, going through that last year was super pivotal. And super helpful for just learning stuff that I can pass on to those guys. But I feel like if I were to have a message, it would be that we've had a solid season, obviously a lot of success throughout the regular season, but all that success really has no impact on what lies ahead. And there's just there's a complete reset to where we have to just focus primarily on each shot and each day in front of us. And there's no guarantee of moving forward. And so, it just, there's obviously just an elevation of the importance of each tournament. And so just really recognizing that's it. That's what we've worked for this entire year. And so I think that'll just kind of generate a higher level of kind of focus and concentration and effort. And I experienced that firsthand last year. And so I'm excited to pass that along and see how everyone responds to that.
Now, Derek, obviously 2 years ago, you guys added a volunteer assistant by the name of Chris Sambry. You know, people may have heard of him, may have not heard of him, but now he's back. He's your guys' official assistant coach. Can you just talk about kind of what he brings to the table just in terms of the way you guys prepare and practice and get better? Because yeah. I think Berko would agree, in my opinion, there's not too many better coaches at development than Chris Sambry.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I feel like he's just an incredible wealth of knowledge when it comes to just statistics and course management. And he just has a plethora of these testing sort of regimens that he has. A lot of that includes TrackMan ball striking test, but there's also a putting test. And so basically he's added kind of a new layer of structure to the program where we'll show up to practice. And a lot of times we'll do a lot of these testing regimens that he has. And so that includes just these line tests on TrackMan where you hit 20 shots with anywhere between 9 iron and 6 iron. And it's just kind of total dispersion. It is summed up and that creates a score. You also do that for longer clubs. And so that's just kind of an example of things we do that, it feels like it's developmentally super crucial because it is such a great way of identifying how your ball striking is, where there are areas to improve. And then combining that with all the decade course management principles that he obviously knows very well. And so, he just has a very, very insightful kind of analytical lens to how to play, and combining that with how Coach Beard just has so much fantastic insight into just kind of playing the game, I would say, as opposed to maybe the analytics of it. And so combining the two, I feel remarkably fortunate to have those two as coaches. And yeah, it's been fantastic having Zambri there for the past couple of years for all the insights he's shared and all of the kind of different practice regimens he's provided.
Now, what's your best score on the extreme line test? And for those who don't know, I think it's like 2 through 9 irons. You hit 20 shots. You kind of alternate it like 7, 3, 8, 4. And I guess the record is Rico Hoey 43. Do you know off the top of your head what your number is?
I know it's nowhere close to 43. I don't even know if I've gotten double that. That test consistently exposes me for mediocre long iron ball striking. And so, but which is great. I mean, that's what I need to know. So I can identify what to work on, but I've probably gotten something around 80, which is averaging 4 yards offline per shot. And so if I'm playing a tournament round, I'm very satisfied with that for a 9 iron to a 2 iron. The fact that Rico got 43 on that, which is averaging just above 2 yards a shot, is honestly pretty astounding. But so I have not come close to that, but hopefully I'll find a way.
Well, they call him the world's greatest driver, but clearly should be ball striker instead of driver. But now your bio page on Pepperdine's website is pretty, I don't know what the right word is, maybe eclectic. I'll just read off a few things. Like, you enjoy, among other things, fly fishing, says the outdoors, just the outdoors. Favorite golfer is Siwoo Kim. King Lear, your favorite book, Zach Brown Band, musical artist. I mean, this is, we're all over the map there. I just want to maybe touch on just a couple of those things. Why Siwoo Kim?
Honestly, I think I wrote that freshman year without really any understanding of why I did that. The only interaction I've had with him is he signed a hat for me at Riviera. And I was really touched by that moment. I just remember really loving that. I kind of vividly remember him winning the Players when he was, was he 20 or maybe even younger when he did that? So I thought that was remarkable. I'd probably replace him with Sahith at this point. Cause I think he
qualified.
Perennial tour pro. And so he's probably my favorite player now. That was super random.
Well, last one for me. Speaking of Sahith, I'm glad you brought him up. I understand when you guys were teammates in college, you probably played a lot of chess together. Do you still play? And just talk about your guys' relationship and maybe what you've learned from Sahith, maybe not just as a player, but as a person too. Because, I mean, clearly he's captured the hearts of everyone, you know, golf fans around the world in these 2 years that he's been on the PGA Tour.
Right, yeah. And that's honestly the least surprising thing to me, just because I know him as well as I do. And he's just obviously a phenomenal player, but remarkably even a better person. I spent a lot of just quality time with him in my first couple of years, because he was rehabilitating his wrist when I was a freshman. And so a lot of the times when the team was traveling, it was just him and me staying behind. And so we spent a ton of time together, just doing various things. And so we became super close friends, played a lot of chess. We play a little less frequently now. He's obviously a little bit busier than I am. I feel like I've learned a ton from him. I'd say primarily just he's kind of set a blueprint for what it looks like to be an impactful player on and off the course, and to develop through college and obviously transition into professional ranks as effectively as he has. And so it's really special to see that he's done that so successfully, but it's also encouraging, I guess, just to knowing that it's feasible and that it can be done, and he just kind of paved the path for doing that.
Well, Derek, we appreciate you joining us bright and early on a Friday morning. Congratulations once again, my friend. All the best to you and the team in this postseason run, and look forward to seeing you guys at Greyhawk next month.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate having me on.
Derek Kitchener breaking through, individual champion at Pasta Tiempo, Pepperdine winning as a team. And we showed it a lot in the broadcast, Brentley, that the last three team champions, Stanford, Pepperdine, and Texas, of the Western Intercollegiate, went on to win the national championship a month later. Could Pepperdine make it four in a row? I think it's possible. I think we always talk Vandy, North Carolina, but they're that next tier of four, six, maybe eight teams that at least right now we think have a chance. So intriguing to see them play. So by the way, the 22 under second round, as good as I've seen in person maybe ever. Now granted, Pasta Tiempo was playing a little easier, but it's still 22 under
around that 12, place. I don't
12, yeah 12 better than BYU, and those were the only two teams that shot even par or under par that day. Hawaii had the third best score. So and I think Derek hit on a key point for me: the cohesiveness, the dynamic, the personalities fit. You and I talk to these coaches. The numbers are great, but when they actually get along, got each other's backs, whether it's the men, the women, I will always lean to maybe a team that doesn't have quite the talent of someone else, but a team that maybe is divided, that half the team is here, half the team's there, and it doesn't work off the course. So great to have Derek on. Other quick things that I took away: Oregon's a really scrappy team, and Owen Averett is on his way to a second or maybe first team All-America season. Had a chance to win for the third time this year. He's really good. And I don't think nationally he gets maybe the attention of some of the others, but he did nothing wrong coming down the stretch. And oh, by the way, he was the only guy on day two to go bogey free. He shoots 66.
Well, Burko, he's 42nd right now in golf stat. He's going to need to improve the ranking a little bit to get into that first team range. But
yeah, he feels like a second teamer.
Yeah, he's. I mean, that's. I think that would be unbelievable for him, especially when you consider that he didn't even start his career at Oregon. He was at Long Beach State. I think by his own admission, he wasn't good enough as a high school player. I mean, we heard Derek talking about how when he first talked to Pepperdine, like, he needed to improve before they would actually offer him. For Owen Averett, that was just, you know, after his freshman year of college. So now that he's finally in Eugene, I think he's really taken off. And I mentioned this on the pregame, one of the pregame shows earlier this week, and the fact that that team in Oregon has really taken on the identity of their head coach, Casey Martin, just from a kind of a gritty, under the radar, kind of chip on the shoulder, like, you know, people are counting me out, but I'm going to prove you wrong. So I'm very impressed by them, very impressed by Cal, kind of what Walter Chun has done with that team, who many probably consider them a year away because they are bringing in the top ranked recruiting class. But he actually talked to them on Sunday night before the tournament, and it was after a coach, you know, and he had heard it from a bunch of people, but it was after a coach said, man, you guys are going to be really good next year. And he took it as a compliment, but at the same time, it didn't really sit right just in terms of he wanted to tell it to his team. He wanted to try to motivate them and say, hey, like, don't worry about next year. Like, you know, I'm worried about you guys. Like, we're not looking ahead. We're going to focus on now. Why not go out and have a good year or a good end of the season this year? And then we'll take on next year when Eric Lee and those guys get in. So those are a couple things from those teams. But real quick, too, Burko, to touch on Pepperdine. I don't know if you saw, but did you see the – I think it was FanDuel had NCAA championship odds, and Pepperdine had the 14th best odds at 40-1?
I did peruse some of the numbers. Was looking for potential value. I honestly didn't get that far down. I got enamored at Illinois at 15 or 18 to one,
Florida at 16 to one.
So,
no, but 40 to one, 41. Like, that's disrespectful. I think, because I mean, this is a team now, I think they're up to sixth or seventh now in golf stat based on how they played at Pasta Tiempo. And I mean, to answer your question from a little earlier, like, can they be the fourth straight Western Intercollegiate champion? Absolutely. And I think that's a crazy stat too, because, you know, great event, but it's not like the field is top to bottom flush with top 25 teams. So like the sample size is small. And then, you know, obviously there's only, there can only be one winner. So the fact that we've been able to do three straight champions now, I think it actually speaks to just how great that course is, how great that event is. Because if you can play well at, on Positempo, in normally what are tough conditions, I know it was a little easier this year. If you can do that, you can play well at Greyhawk. Because I think in a way, not super similar golf courses, just from the eye test, but the way that putting, I think, separates you, especially on those two golf courses, in the importance on kind of precision off the tee, and like those are two things that I think are very alike in those two courses. Plus they're just really hard. So I think Pepperdine is going to really feel good about this. And I wouldn't count them out at all, because they are showing that they're, you know, deep team. And especially with Roberto Nieves going out and shooting 63 a day after shooting 77, if your five guy can do that, we've seen it before. Like, guys at the end of the lineup get hot, and then all of a sudden you have a national championship in your trophy case.
Sam Choi, the X factor, said it on the broadcast. If he can play like he did this week, be that solid three, you know, we always get caught up in depth. It's nice. You got to win 3 points when you get to match play. Sam plays like that, and Hitchner and Mao continue to do their thing. I think they're solidly in that second tier, if you will, behind the big two. There are some teams, though, right now in trouble. Might not even get a regional selection. Sort of give me an idea of what you're looking at, maybe 2, 3, 4 teams that have work to do, and a lot of it for some of them.
Yeah, so with the 500 rule, there were probably a lot more teams in danger a couple weeks ago, but somehow, you know, it always seems to work out at the end, right? And you know, they've played well. You have a team like Arkansas that has gone from way below to now they're 6 wins up going into SECs, which that's a deep conference. So Arkansas still not out of the woods yet. Wake Forest is 3 down, so going into ACC championship, so they'll have their work cut out, but I think they'll be okay. Notre Dame is squarely right at even. And then USC is probably the most notable team that I think it could be the end of the season if they don't win a Pac-12 championship, because I'm actually looking at the number right now. They are 9.
Yeah, the math doesn't work, really.
Right? 9 below. And so they would essentially have to finish when you – 12
one or
teams,
two.
Though. They would have to finish –
top.
They'd
two.
Have to win. No, they'd have to win, because
two,
if you
you'd be
10-1.
Well, you'd be 10-1 if you finished.
Oh, even. Okay, that's right. Yeah, so they have to finish second.
Yeah.
Which, based on how they've played all year, I would say that's fairly improbable. But, I mean, programs live after not making it a year because of the 500 rule. I mean, look at what Alabama's done this year after not making it a season ago. So they'll be all right. They're just going to have to. Again, like I said, they're going to have to look in the mirror and ask themselves, you know, what were the issues and how can I get better? And, you know, they have some talent. So, and they're bringing in a decent recruiting class as well. So they'll be fine. It just, you know, sometimes these things happen and you just don't have a good year.
Something that did happen at Augusta National, Sam Bennett, the Texas A&M senior, what a magical run, you know, 8-under halfway through, and you start thinking, could he? Maybe. Yeah, we know Sam really well. I mean, he wasn't bashful in saying, I'm here to win a golf tournament. But to finish tied for 16th, a tip of the cap. You know, forget the fact he was low AM. You know, even halfway through that third round, he was right there. And to play with John Rahm and Brooks Koepka. I'm always curious. Obviously, he didn't play in the Aggie Invitational. There was no chance that was ever going to happen, in my opinion. does this take him to a whole nother level? We will have to wait and see. Does this sort of springboard him to a great postseason run? But just take it as it is. Masters, heck of a show by Sam.
Yeah, I almost wonder if he maybe felt a little disrespected with all the Gordon Sargent talk early week when you have Sargent playing with Rory and you got a big feature on PGAtour.com that goes out about you. And granted, Sam Bennett had a nice feature go out about him too, written by our Ryan Lander. But everyone was talking about Gordon Sargent. You know, would they have to Sargent-proof Augusta? Like, he's not going to hit anything more than an 8-iron into any hole. Like all of these things. And I think Sam Bennett kind of – because the Masters is normally – like, the USAM champ at the Masters, they're kind of like the big deal. Like, they're the biggest story every single year. And to be honest, Sam didn't really get that. Like, he didn't get a pre-tournament press conference. Like, he didn't get all the headlines going in. But by Thursday afternoon or Friday afternoon, like, he was – I mean, he had earned it. Like, he kind of showed in – and that's kind of the player he's always been, because I think he has felt slighted in the past, whether it be award watch lists or award voting or just people talking about favorites. I mean, he mentioned that before the USAM when – I don't know if he was actually talking about me, but he did use my name. But I think he was a little mistaken, because I only had three players that I talked about on air, and he wasn't one of them. But it's not like I was going through favorites, and he probably would have been fourth or fifth in that anyways. But anyways, he uses these things as motivation to bring out his best golf. And I mean, that performance, I didn't think he was going to win, because you never think that an amateur is going to win a major championship, especially the Masters and their first trip to Augusta National. But just the way he was able to kind of carry himself playing, I watched the end of that third round Sunday morning alongside John Rahm and Brooks Koepka. And he really looked comfortable. And those are players that he believes that he can play alongside for the next couple decades. And I think this was a big week for him in that it might have boosted his Hogan Award stock. Like, he might now be the front runner for the Hogan Award. And, you know, I think his profile has now just gotten that much better. And you know, I have no doubt now he's going to be a star at the next level. I think there were some question marks just how much he really wanted it, how comfortable he would be in that environment. But I mean, looking at him playing the Masters, I think he's ready to turn professional. So he's going to enjoy these last month or two in college golf, and I look for him to have a lot of success.
Yeah, going to be fun to watch the continued journey of Sam Bennett. I got a couple minutes to go. Let's sort of set the table. What's on tap? I mean, postseason's here, but still one really good regular season event for the men here starting this weekend.
Yeah, Thunderbird Collegian. I got Ludwig Åberg and Texas Tech in play. North Carolina, we'll see if they can, again, reassert themselves as the best team in college golf. You know, Oklahoma State's in there, Texas, Arizona State. So these are going to be a lot of teams that we see probably factor at Greyhawk. You know, granted, this is Papago Golf Course. It's more of a public track, kind of, even though it's only 20 minutes away. Very different golf course, at least in my opinion, than Greyhawk, especially kind of around the greens and on the greens, but kind of similar environment. So we'll see if, you know, Ludwig can get another win, kind of match Gordon Sargent, who just got his third win a few days ago. And as it relates to Player of the Year awards, and what to see, because I think momentum's a big thing, right, Berko? Like, if you can end the regular season. I mean, we saw Stanford do it a few years ago when they won five straight, including the national championship. If you can add a late win in the regular season going into conference, I think that could be, and I think that could be a big deal.
Yeah, for some teams they need it. For others, it's just another step in the progression to try to win it all. Real quickly, we want to preview some men's conference championships as we did with the women. Let's just start with the SEC's top of mind. A lot of good teams. I think it's simple. Vandy continues to roll, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're clearly the favorites. I think Auburn probably would have had a case before that. They just had an injury. Evan Vogt tore his ACL, so he's out for the year. Actually played 54 holes on the injury just a couple of days ago. But
I saw that video you posted. It was God bless him.
I mean, against all advice, he wanted to, and this is before he actually knew exactly what the injury was, but played through the pain because he wants to be part of that team. He wants to be part of this team for the postseason run. So I think Auburn, who enjoyed some time at number one earlier this season, I just don't know if they have the horses to compete with Vanderbilt. The only other team I think that has a shot, I mean, obviously with Sam Bennett playing well, but I think Florida. I think your Florida Gators, Burko, give Vanderbilt a run for their money, and one of the best top threes in golf. And so I think those are the two teams that we'll probably have our eye on.
ACC, who's jumping out to you?
Coming into the year, I really liked Georgia Tech just from the experience. And this is aside from North Carolina just being loaded, but something just tells me they're going to be at CCNC up in Pinehurst. It'll not really home turf, but kind of home turf for North Carolina. I just don't be surprised if Georgia Tech, led by Christo Lamprecht, a lot of experienced players, just don't be surprised if they get into that final match and get things done. Plus, as we've noted, North Carolina, they've had some struggles in match play in big events the last couple of seasons. So I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but I think Andrew DiBattista's squad would probably admit that they need to get better in this format if they want to win not only an ACC title, but an NCAA title.
Yeah, it'll be tough to take down the Tar Heels on paper, but obviously it's not taken care of on paper. So, but certainly the favorite heading to that Big 12. I think it could go a lot of different directions and feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, Burko. Do you think it's Texas Tech's year finally? I mean, they haven't won a Big 12 title in, gosh, I don't know. I mean, at least not since 2014, as I've had the recent list of champions right here in front of me. But something just tells me that it's Texas Tech's time to finally be, the belle of the Big 12 ball, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, they have the highest ranking, probably a better resume. We know what Oklahoma has seemingly figured out in postseason runs in recent years. Texas, it's there. Is it going to happen this week? I don't know. Those are
great course, though. Prairie Dunes. I mean, the last time we were there a couple years ago, it was an exciting finish with a double bogey by Pearson.
Three teams tied coming down the 18th?
Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas. Pearson Cootie made a late double. I think Bo Jin almost lost a ball. I think Oklahoma ended up winning. I think it was Oklahoma State. Yeah, 2021 Oklahoma State. Great golf course. Usually leads to great golf and great golf tournaments.
Pac-12, Arizona State, the best team, but it's at Stanford, if I'm not mistaken. So
yep.
You got to like the Cardinal as a potential spoiler. Those are the two that jump off to me. Oregon, again, intrigues me. Played well at Pasatiempo, had 1-2 of 3 going into it. I feel like those three teams – I was somewhat disappointed how Arizona played at Pasatiempo. Those were one of those squads that I thought was building momentum. But as we go through all this, it seems like there's a clear favorite in each conference. And then there's one or two that could upset, that top dog coming down the stretch.
Yeah, Stanford playing at home is clearly an advantage for them. But I will say, I think Arizona State has surprised me all year just in terms of what they lost from a year ago to what Matt Thurman and that squad have been able to keep doing this season. I mean, they've been, one of the best five teams in the country all year. Their freshmen have really started to play well. Michael Miasith and Luke Potter. Riggs Johnson has had a much better year. So, yeah, Stanford's at home, but something tells me that Arizona State's going to have a lot to say about these big tournaments, coming up the next month and a half or so with conference regionals and NCAA championship. So I think Arizona State clips Stanford here and they make a run in their last NCAAs at Greyhawk. But again, a lot can happen. They can go and lay two eggs and maybe I won't be as high on them. But for some reason, I like this team maybe more than, you know, the stats or kind of the paper would suggest going back to that.
And then the Big Ten, Illinois, would they shoot 68 under at Missouri's event?
Yeah, it's like death taxes, Illinois one in the Big
Yeah,
Ten.
It's in Jersey. I think it's Galloway National, obviously a big fan and supporter of Rutgers and the Scarlet Knights and the job Rob Schutte's done. I think from a 500 standpoint, Rutgers needs to finish second, maybe third to do it. And heck, they shot 25 under at Missouri's event. That's a school record in relation to par. And as I was telling the crew before we went on the air, I said, boy, Missouri played great at home. They shot 40 under par and they lost by 28. I've been leaning there and I'm still sticking with Vandy in North Carolina. Illinois very might well win this national championship. They're that good.
Bold.
Yeah. And I'm not locking that in. I'm not going to waver. I think we both said Vandy, North Carolina, back and forth.
Yeah, that's your trendy pick. That's your kind of
– yeah.
You know, I picked Vanderbilt, but and I'm sticking with him. But, you know, if I had to start a new bet, you know, I'd go with Illinois as a trendy
pick. This is not, and they've had some really good teams, and I'm not there yet. This might end up being his very best.
Oh, wow. I mean, maybe.
When you start, I mean, what, Jackson Buchanan shoots a million under. We know about Adrian Dumont de Chazard. Tommy Cool was indifferent. Like, you start going down, maybe there's not like a star, but you start looking at these four or five, and you're like,
yeah,
this might be as good as any team he's ever had. And he's had some really good ones.
Yeah, definitely chemistry-wise, I think, too, that they just always seem to, you know, kind of pick each other up, you know, when one guy plays bad, another guy doesn't. But I don't know. Those teams with Nick Hardy and Dylan Meyer as your four and five were pretty good, too. But
agreed.
Again, I think you could argue that some of those years, Illinois, if it was stroke play, NCAAs, like they would have two or three national titles because they were that much better than all of those other teams for some of those years, particularly,
yep.
You know, 2016 comes to mind, but match play just kind of bit them in the rear. But I like Illinois a lot. I don't think anyone touches them in the Big Ten, although I think Maxwell Moldovan from Ohio State may be maybe not a favorite, but definitely a front runner for the individual title. So that's kind of more the unknown than the team championship. I think that's we could say safely that Illinois is going to win that one.
Yeah, I feel good about that. Also feel good about wrapping this one up. Always good to reconvene. It's been a hectic few weeks. We appreciate everyone as always for taking some time to catch up with us on College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Burka. We'll do it again next week.